Hello and welcome to our new series, special series of conversations with artists in Melbourne, and hopefully we're going to get some producers and people who work in the industry to talk to us about the things that they do. But this is particularly special because we have Katie Svitkides here, who did Neon Sarcophagus, which was one of the experiences you just heard about in the Hotel Obscura evening that Philip and I enjoyed. So we have brought her along to get her feedback as to what happened to her on the other side of the door.
You might remember that we talked about together the unicorn-like costume that was such a striking introduction to this particular experience. One of the most kind of memorable visual moments in that whole weird evening of walking around the hotel and doing things.
Yeah, I remember opening the door and walking in and just this thing in front of me, just dancing around, and I'm just like, is that the head? Is that the front? Is that the back? And you know, is it a horse? It's obviously a lady. And then I remembered from Instagram that I'd seen some of your photos, and I was like, oh, it's Katie. I'm gonna be okay. I'm not gonna be traumatized.
So maybe we start there, Katie. That's our view. How does it look from where you're standing?
Well, it's kind of you know, it was a strange experience, like, guys, because I basically had made like this little home for myself in the bathroom. So, you know, I spent a lot of time like hanging out in the bathroom and then getting like text messages telling me like, okay, this is what's happening. And then the door opens, and I guess like I've got my back to the door. So I have no idea. Like, there's like these strange people just enter the room, and I basically have no idea who they are. Which is kind of weird. And then I sort of would catch a glimpse of people through the mirror, and it'd be sort of interesting, the people that were like totally bewildered by what was going on and people that were like engaging with me straight away. So sometimes I could kind of like catch a glimpse of them before they would notice me, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of hard. I don't know. I didn't talk in my piece either. So it was sort of like difficult to try and read how that interaction was going to work in a very short period of time, and figure out how I could make my movements kind of work with the audience member. Yeah.
And for me, I can tell you, I don't actually know this about you, Philip, but I didn't actually read the card. Like, so as soon as I got the key, I just like busted into the door. And then like you didn't move, like you were just kind of slowly moving in front of the mirror, the window. But then I was like, oh, nothing's happening. I must have to do something. And then I'm like, oh, turn the thing over. And then I read the thing and I was like, oh, okay. I realized that I had to get on the bed, and I was like, okay, take my shoes off and lie down. So maybe there was like a few faltering moments there as well.
Yeah. And like sometimes like people would like read the card, but then they would get in and like move all the stuff around on the bed. So like everything was sort of placed very specifically because obviously like later in the piece you get covered by the shroud. But like the amount of people that would come in and move the pillows and like set themselves up, and then it would be this kind of task of me trying to like get people to get back to this position they were supposed to be in without talking.
So I was kind of like nesting in, like, now art me.
Yeah.
What did you do? Did you read the card first, or were you fully prepared?
Please, of course. Oh. I did my homework. And very diligently and politely went over and lay down on the bed.
Yes.
I'm interested in the fact that it was a bed-based piece that you created. Is that because you were invited to take part in a hotel-based work, or had you wanted to do something with people lying down before your involvement in Hotel Obscura?
I think I'd wanted to, like, I'd been sort of thinking about making a work about near-death experiences, and like I'd kind of been thinking of different ways to like, yeah, make a work where someone would have to lie down. Like, I kind of designed all these like inflatable pillow beds, and then I got like approached by these guys to be part of Hotel Obscura. So like I was like, well, I actually have this thing that I've been thinking about.
You're like, I'm ready. I'm so ready.
That like involves a bed. So yeah.
And were you in contact with hotel staff as part of the development of the project?
Not really. I actually like used to work in that hotel like about 10 years ago. So which was kind of a weird experience, like coming back to this place that I had like worked in very briefly as like and a uni student, but I didn't really have any contact with them there. I kind of like, I saw one person that I recognized and I was like, oh God, quick.
Yeah. One of the fascinating things from the audience's perspective is that you realize you're part of a space that is not exclusively theatrical. I mean, often when you go to a theater, that's what it's for. That's the only thing going on. Whereas here, I was not always certain whether people were connected to the Hotel Obscura project or cleaning the hotel or guests of the hotel.
I think that's like being a citizen of Melbourne though sometimes. Like sometimes you're walking around and you're like, hang on, no, what? Did it get easier with time or was it freshly nerve-wracking every time that door opened?
Yeah, it was like pretty nerve-wracking and just like, because we performed the show 15 times a day. So like the first session started at 2 p.m. and then the last session I think started at 9:30. Wow. So it's just like quite exhausting. Like just by like that last session, you're always like, oh God, okay. Mm. We've got to like, which you guys saw it in the evening, didn't you?
Yeah, we were second to last evening session. But that's incredible to know. I didn't realize that it was that extensive. So that Craig Peed piece that we saw must have been so ravaging for his mind and his body, like so physical. Mm. Fascinating. The piece itself, why, I guess, you know, like everything starts with a why, but why near-death experience? Why had you been sort of interested in that?
I guess most of the work that I make sort of comes from like exploring a different experience of light that maybe is like sort of on the fringes of like our kind of experience, like human experience. So I guess like people talk about the light at the end of the tunnel, and I'd also been really interested in like light therapy and like these like crystal light beds, and I sort of had some personal experience with people I knew who'd had that kind of experience. So it was sort of, I guess the work is kind of a cross between like a light therapy session and then like the similarities between that and say like people's talking about near death.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
Did you find yourself compelled by those narratives? I know that I find the certainty of people who have had a near death experience quite compelling. They speak in a way that just doesn't invite any kind of cynicism or disbelief, right? So something has authentically taken place for these people and they tell it straight. You know, they tell it in a clear, simple way that is actually quite eerie. And working with those stories, did you find yourself more and more or maybe less and less compelled by them or connected to them as narratives?
I don't know. I think they're kind of interesting. And there's like such a, like, I feel like it's like I just sort of opened this can of worms. Like, I mean, all the text that I source is just from YouTube. Mm-hmm. And like, there's, you know, my like YouTube feed is like filled with like people's stories now. It's just like this never ending like cycle of stories. I mean, I think the other thing that I found really interesting is like all the stories that I tell, like, from women of a particular age, and like there was a real connection I think with the audience members of that age who, you know, the way the different people connected with it was really interesting. But like, yeah, and the way that, like, actually depending on where you saw it, the way people connected with it, like if you saw it in the daytime, it was like a very different show.
Yeah, okay. It's like circadian rhythm kind of thing, like where you were at in your body clock, how willing you were to kind of lie down and relax, or at that.
I think so. And also just like people in the nighttime were like either like, like everything became really sexy. Like all of a sudden it's like nighttime and you're in a hotel and like, you know, yeah. Or like people, I think particularly towards the weekend, like I had a couple of people that were like pretty wasted and they were like, cool. Okay. And you're like, okay, like this is very different. I think daytime it's like people like, I'm just taking some time out of my day to come and see
how
this art, and like, yeah, so it's sort of really different.
So you're a lighting designer, which is probably the missing element to this conversation with you talking about how you're obsessed with how people can experience light in different ways in non sort of day-to-day experiences. Is that the lighting contraption that you use, is that a light therapy light, or is that just a standard light thing that you use for shows?
So it's a light that I've kind of like Frankensteined together. Yeah. Out of like, so the base of the lamp, I kind of had designed like some things that I was going to make, and then I just like couldn't find anyone to help me make it. So the base of the lamp is actually just, I think, from IKEA. Okay. Or Bunnings. No, it's from Bunnings. That's right. Like we bought all this stuff and then we're like, okay, this is great. And then the inside is like being like refabbed with lights that I like have used in other performance works, which are then running through my computer. But yeah, but the actual sculpture is just
it's a Katie original.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard of light therapy. I mean, did you do some training in it or kind of model your art experience based on what really happens to people?
I haven't. I've done like some reading about it and I've spoken to some people about it. I don't know.
It seems unlikely to be therapeutic.
Yeah. I mean, it's very like new agey. Yeah. And I don't know how much I really, like, for me, I guess I'm sort of really fascinated in these things, but I don't know if I'm, like, a real, like, true believer, but I'm not, like, I guess that was sort of, the tricky thing in my work. It's, like, I don't want to make fun of these things, but I'm not necessarily, like, yeah, closed. Like, let's go and, like, do this. And
yeah, and to clarify what I mean by unlikely to be therapeutic, the experience for me was unsettling and confronting. I mean, that much light that close to your face is definitely going to evoke some kind of reaction. But for me, it was somewhat defensive.
Yep.
Because I felt that something was actually quite dangerous and needed to be responded to. It sort of woke me up rather than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your experience, Carla?
Oh, my God. I had the complete opposite experience. And now I remember what it reminded me of. I've had this experience 3 times in my life, and this was the 3rd time I'd had it. And the other 2 times is during guided meditation. So it's like I just completely leave my body. Like my body becomes like a stone that I can't actually move. And it's just like I'm like the diving bell and the butterfly or something. Like I'm like, move your arm. And it's just like there's nothing there, you know. And then like I can kind of feel like my spirit or whatever is kind of like detached from my body, like it's just sort of hovering a couple of inches up. Like I just completely blissed out within 10 seconds. And I think it was a combination of like the adrenaline and, you know, the endorphins and stuff that was already like I was almost at panic mode. So I feel like I was kind of like doped up. And I was able to kind of, because I knew Katie and I was like in a trusting environment, I was able to go so deep, but it was the complete opposite to you.
Okay. And that's less surprising now that I hear that you knew Katie and so experienced the space as somehow familiar. For me, I had this total stranger dressed as a unicorn pulling a sheet over my head. I was actually quite hyper aware of my body, but in a different way. I experienced it as a bit hypergendered as well. Like I was really aware of being a man in a room with a woman being covered by that woman. And the fact that there had been no conversation meant that any sense of negotiating consent around the activity was troubling. I mean, it was so nicely provocative along those lines. And I experienced this with some of the other works at Hotel Obscura as well, that there was this sense of, oh, I've bought a ticket to this, so that means that
consent.
Exactly, that implies something about participation and willingness. But I guess, Katie, you would have needed to read people as closely as we were reading the space.
Yeah. And I had 2 people that just like refused to go under the sheet, which, you know, I still sort of just had to adjust the performance.
So what happened? If they said, no, I don't want to be covered, what could you then do?
So I would just wheel the light over to the bed and put it on the bed. And I mean, they're both very different circumstances. Like one person obviously felt really claustrophobic and they were just like, nah, like no way. Mm-hmm. And the other person like really wanted to watch me perform. Like, and I kind of was like, well, this is not what this is about. Like, this is not what my work is about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I started the sonic work and the light work, but then like I just sat in the room and like kind of didn't perform.
It's interesting because I've thought about this experience heavily since we've had it, and I was just like, what would make my experience more comfortable? And I'm like, would it be a quick questionnaire? It's like, are you claustrophobic? Do you not want to be in a space with a pretty much naked man? You know, like, could there be some key questions that are asked in order to kind of tailor the experience in a way that would make you feel more comfortable? But then I kind of feel like that is the antithesis of what the experience is meant to be. But in some ways, it's like, it's really fucking confronting.
Well, we saw at other parts of the Festival of Live Art, a kind of consent seeking questionnaire type introduction to a piece. But there's just something naff about that. I mean, there's something delightful about being in a space where you feel that risks are being taken. There's something, especially at this cultural moment or kind of social moment, a sense that, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a riskier life, or to have curated environments where we cannot be preoccupied by security and safety. And I took pleasure in the sense of being a male body covered up by a stranger, because I needed to be so alert and aware of what was happening. Like, I definitely don't see that as a negative part of the experience, and would have giggled if, like, a questionnaire came out from underneath the door saying, are you okay with this?
I know, I guess the card, like, kind of is there to sort of say, like, if at any point, like, you're not okay, just, like, you know, we can stop it. And, like, for me, that kind of feels like enough. And I've had, like, previous works where people have just been like, nah, like, I don't want to do this. And, like, that's okay. Like, it's just like, okay, that's also like becomes something different. But I think it's hard, like, to see, if you signpost it too much, then like that danger is like gone. And then, you know, what is the work? It's like,
It's just because there was 12 works, and just hearing the other people talking about other ones, like there was actually a few more that I would have much more enjoyed and been much more drawn to. And I think that that's kind of like my idea. And it's not like a questionnaire as you're there, but like when you buy a ticket, you fill in a quick online.
So to be allocated.
Because they curate it for you as a stranger. But maybe if they had a little bit of more data, they'd be able to kind of, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Did you get to experience any of the other works that were in the hotel?
Not in the hotel. So we built the works in a rehearsal space together. And so like throughout those 2 weeks, like I've done like versions of people's shows, but I guess not
the full experience.
Not the full experience in the hotel, which was kind of like strange for me because the two people I was like paired with whose work you saw, like Craig's work, I never saw it. So I like had like people would leave me and go to an experience that I just had like no idea what it was.
So the 3 works that we saw were a package.
Yeah.
So you were just always allocated that package. Interesting.
Yeah.
So then like, that whole questionnaire thing wouldn't work.
So I always knew that like people were going to see Mark's show and come to me, which was kind of interesting because his work is so chatty, and then people like get to me. Like it was always sort of that second round where people would be like, cool, we're gonna have another conversation, and then you'd be like, I'll be like, no, we're not, because I don't talk.
Yeah, that is I
that's fascinating.
Felt that there was a sharp transition between those 2 works. Very different atmospheres. There was a kind of carnival element to both of them, and a sense of exploring masks and hiding the face. But other than that, I mean, it was from, you know, chatting about Grindr to being in an eerily lit, silent coffin.
And that's the thing, actually, that made me think when you were just talking about it. I was like, oh, that's interesting, because when you were talking about your body, I'm like, oh, how fascinating to go to a hotel where you're supposed to go and take your clothes off with a stranger or whatever, but you're actually walking into a room and getting into bed and having, like, being covered up.
Yeah.
And then you've had that reverse experience where you've had Mark's work and talking about, you know, taking your clothes off in public spaces. And then, that's actually very interesting. That's an interesting narration.
Mm.
Yeah, and then supposedly going to the life and death work of Craig's, you know, as the finality of the So it sounds like it was pretty good, like, you know, hard work, long days. Did you have anybody really freak out or give you any feedback? Or
I had one person who didn't really want to do the work, and she was like quite like very like in my face from like the moment that she like walked into the room, which I was like, whoa, okay. Like it was a very odd experience for me, because I feel like I'm not a really like super confident performer, which is why I always kind of hide behind these like elaborate costumes. And to like have this person just feel like they could just like really be up in my face was a bit like, I was like, okay. But behind the scenes, there's like quite a lot of support going on. Like, so we all had these little Twitter feeds and we could like tweet people whenever we want. And as I said, like I'd kind of created this little home for myself in the bathroom. So like if I needed to go in there or like get help, like.
Mm. Mm. How fascinating that these members of the audience felt they were in a position to tailor the experience to such an extent. I mean, a standard theatre audience member wouldn't dream of adjusting the performance based on their own particular personality, right? Not everything is customized, and nor necessarily should live art be customized. Or is that something that you think is part of?
No, because possible? Do you know what I immediately thought of when I heard Katie say that? And that if I had done Craig's work first and then gone to see her, I would have just been like, fuck you, fuck this whole thing, I'm leaving, and fuck the unicorn head that you rode in on, you know? So, like, maybe it was, like, the the journey that person went on. So yeah. I don't know. Wow.
Generally, yeah, it was like people, I think, yeah, it's like for me, I guess the biggest thing is like trying to ease people's discomfort because obviously it's a really strange space, but also like keep the integrity of that. So I'm like, how do I make this work without like, I think really particularly early on the first couple of days, I did talk a couple of times because I just didn't know how to like get around the situation. I was like, oh, okay. But
yeah, but you were really calm when I walked in the room and that like really chilled me out. Tell us about the costume. So I feel like it's referenced in the dialogue that plays. She talks about this kind of mythical creature that she walks towards. Is that what it was about?
Yeah, well, I actually had come up with a costume and then I found that sound, interestingly. Because originally, like, the sound was just celebrities. So actually a lot of the text is celebrities. It's like Elizabeth Taylor. There's a lot of Elizabeth Taylor in there and Sharon Stone. And then I decided to add, like, some more Australian voices and I couldn't find any Australian celebrities. So that's sort of where that mythical creature. But I'd already sort of, I guess, once I decided that I didn't want to talk in my piece because I just didn't really feel like I could do it in a way that wasn't going to be, like, super naff. Like the costume just started kind of evolving from there, I guess. And I've been looking at this artist, Marcus Coates, who's like this UK performance artist who creates these, like he acts as like a shaman, like, and he does these like shamanistic ritual performances. And he has these like crazy costumes that are like Adidas tracksuits with like big like animal pelts. And so I guess like that kind of reference, like it started sort of there and then like went in this like whole other like really campy direction. So that's sort of where it came from. The headpiece is from Rose Chong though. Yeah.
Because that was my next question. Yeah.
So I was going to make one and then I went there just so I was like, I'll just see like what they've got there. And then they had this piece, which is from Rio, that someone had donated to them, which like apparently no one has used for ages, and I was like, that's perfect. And then everything else is like basically my own clothes.
Yeah,
cool. Pretty much. Yeah, I think. But yeah, that's where the costume came from.
It was really amazing. Any other questions?
Well, Philippe? I'm interested in whether it's changed you as a performer. I mean, will you return to one-on-one work or covering people in sheets work, or is there anything that you're going to keep developing in other performances?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the costume is, like, developing at the moment. And, like, because I've just gone back to art school now, so I've been, like, making, like, video and, like, performance sort of work using that costume and other headpieces that I've been making. I guess like all my work like has kind of developed from these sort of, if not a sheet, like I've made a piece where I like took people out of a party and locked them in a dark room, like with the sort of sound and lighting work. So I feel like that is sort of interesting to me, like creating these sort of places that are like fascinating but also a bit disconcerting.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions for us, having experienced the work?
No, it's just really interesting to hear that you guys had like really different experiences.
And that it was, I mean, even though I knew you, I still feel like it would have been gendered. Like I still would, if you had been a man performing that piece, I probably would have had a much similar reaction as Philip. So well, I find that quite interesting.
In our three discussions about Hotel Obscura, there was definitely a sense that each of those one-on-one performances somehow drew from us something very personal and something that identified us as within certain categories. And I think that's worthwhile and something that maybe only live art can achieve to such an extent, kind of drawing on and responding to the particular nature of the audience member. Mm. This has been so much fun.
Yeah. Do you have anything coming up that you want to plug or talk about? Any shows coming up?
No.
No.
Just
watch
school.
This space. Like,
just
watch
school.
This space.
You can come to my like first year MCA
yes,
show.
Please.
Oh my god. Sounds so exciting.
We will be there. And let's do more conversations.
Yes.
If you've got someone you'd like us to talk to, or if you would like to talk to us, send us an email at us@acrossisle.com. This nice little sophisticated cup of tea with Melbourne theatre makers has been just super fun. We just made it up and it worked.
On the spot.
High fives.
Okay. Thanks for coming, Katie.
Thanks, guys.